sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap by Sifter. On Lightmap, we explore what it takes to make video games and interactive media, and you meet creative teams from all around the world. We talk to developers, artists, musicians, writers, vocalists, actors sometimes. My name is Gianni Di Giovanni, and thanks to my co-host Adam Christou for joining me on this episode. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Our guests on Lightmap this week are Teddy Diff, director, co-writer, actor, and vocalist, and Claire Dia, co-writer on We Are OFK, a musical episodic biopic about a cool bunch of friends who are just trying to make it in the musical world while struggling through, their day jobs and the pressures of that. Hello to you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, so great to be here.
Thanks for having us. That was about as tight of an explanation of the project as I've ever done. So yeah. Thank you for doing it for us.
We can't wait to learn a little bit more about your game that is really interesting and uses a lot of things that you don't commonly see in games these days. But before we do, let's find out what's been making the news this week on Sifter's news podcast, Walkthrough.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Gianni Di Giovanni.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 5th of May.
Escape from Tarkov developers relent, allowing access to PvE mode for players who bought an all DLC bundle, but not before saying, sorry, you're mad.
Solo developed Manor Lords and indie city builder break sales and Steam records.
Take-Two shuts down studios behind Kerbal Space Program and Oli Oli World.
And we wrap all the cool things announced at ID at Xbox.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Articles to read, podcasts to listen to, and videos to watch on sifter.com.au.
Here's your shot at it. Can you tell me, in your words, what is We Are OFK?
Okay, I usually say We Are OFK is two things, right? It is OFK, which is a virtual band. So like the Gorillaz or Hatsune Miku or KDA or Alvin and the Chipmunks or Josie and the Pussycats. Or like the Monkees, if you're being kind of technical about it. And then it is a video game that tells their story of how the band came together. So as a project team, we kind of operate those two things, both in the game space and also in the music industry space.
You know, why was it that you wanted to do it in that particular format? Is it just because it really pulls on that television style? Or did it make sense from a production perspective?
I'd say both. I mean, Claire comes from TV, so you could talk to that a little bit. But like structurally, I was interested in telling a story in episodic format. It seemed to make a lot of sense. The like early drafts of the script were like pretty sitcom format-y. So we knew we were going to have an ensemble cast, and we knew like we wanted to give them each focus and perspective, right? So that combined with the fact that we knew we were going to be releasing music and we wanted to have a way to pace it out in terms of how we released it, just kind of like came together really nicely in terms of like, okay, we'll release a new song from the band every week and we'll also do a new episode every week. And I've also just had it like chip on my shoulder for like a decade about like why I want to do a weekly game. Why can we not do this? So
exactly.
But yeah.
Like, I mean, Ted, we really wanted to make a game that felt also very like real, very like in the world that we're living in. So It was important to us to be able to release it as kind of like the characters are living it out in real time. Mm-hmm. Like there's, you know, a week between episodes, there's a week between what's happening to the characters in the story. So yeah, I felt like, you know, it's like for releasing it all at once, it's like the story can't happen all at once. We gotta some time's gotta pass.
I feel like I was just thinking about this the other day because I was watching some TV show that like had like clearly no sense of specific time, but it didn't matter. And I was like, why the fuck was I so worried about like, is it a Tuesday or is it a Thursday?
Right. Oh yeah, the Saturday Sunday of it all.
It's an important writing process.
Big headache.
Yeah.
I almost want to guess what that show was, but I might leave it to the side. Claire, I'm really curious. You've got a lot of background in television writing. You worked on things like Nora from Queens and Fresh Off the Boat. What was it like coming into this project and how different was it from traditional TV writing rooms?
You know, it was actually more similar than I thought it was going to be. Like getting into the game at the start, I was pretty intimidated. I was like, oh my God, all these choices. Are we going to like basically write like 50 times the amount of script as a regular TV show would? But, you know, the actual writing process was very similar to that of TV writing. And we, you know, story came first. We wrote the scripts, the episodes, and then we kind of did like the choice pass afterwards, an equally important pass, but it was kind of like a divided process. So it was easy for my brain to digest, and I wasn't so scared after we started doing it. And I'm so new to games. I don't know how other games do it, but Teddy took a very character and story driven approach to it. That was, you know, just wanting it to, the story was the most important thing, or like it was very important for us to tell like a story, like any other TV show. So yeah, it felt very natural.
Well, let's jump into that story then. So it's set in a city, it's in LA, and it's one of those stories for me that is kind of the city as a character as well. It's part of the sort of not just the backdrop, but the experience of all these characters in it as well. And, you know, I've always felt like there is this sort of really interesting overlap between the creative existence of people in the game development community and the creative existence of independent musicians. Like that, it is a very similar experience. And I feel like both industries have this sort of upper tier, the AAA game world or the major label world, which tend to be dominated by big, powerful men that have found themselves in positions of power for a long time. And I think a lot of creative people find themselves in this weird sort of like strange ennui, if you will, where they kind of end up working in places that maybe not really nourish them or give them the drive that they need because they want to do creative work. It was interesting to sort of see a game all about that overlap. And so I'm curious, like, how did this process of setting these characters up begin? How did you decide to put them in a game development universe and then also make them musicians? Like, I'm really curious. Is this a bit of autofiction as well because of your background, Teddy? Like, I'm fascinated to unpack this, so.
Not literally, right? Like, this, like, all the names and places are purely fictional.
Right, yeah.
We're all friends here.
Yeah.
But I think like the way that it became what it was is that it started, like I said, in this kind of a sitcom-y format. And then we knew it was going to be this group of people in LA, very write what you know, write about a creative process and the industry of creating things and capitalism a little bit overshadowing. And so we knew they kind of needed to come together around a project. It was just, it just felt like an important part of how we would structure these episodes. So the way in which maybe it's a little bit I almost said autocratic, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I hope not. The way that it started focusing on music is actually my very first collaborator on the project was Michaela Foote, who is our producer, who had been a friend of mine who had a full history of working as management for recording artists, for musicians. And we started working together, not expecting to do music, but it was just kind of like, oh, I'm looking for like an indie producer or someone to help with this project. I feel like a lot of the verbs and work types are similar. But then as soon as we needed a project, it was like, oh, wait, okay. Michaela understands the music industry. I have a background in singing and music, and I would love to incorporate that. We don't want to make a story that is like fully like a game about making games. You know, like it does exist a little bit in that space because it was worth taking a couple jabs at like big industry companies. But that is kind of how the makeup of the people ended up enforcing the format of the thing. And I think that happened throughout, both in terms of like Claire joining and reinforcing like the pacing and the process of the writing process for TV, as well as a lot of our team coming from televised animation too.
I'm curious about the pacing in particular, because one thing I really like about this story is the use of digital communication, which doesn't always translate really well on screen in television. I mean, I've seen a lot of TV shows try to bring in text messages or text conversations. I think of Heartstopper on Netflix as one of the most recent examples of teenagers on their phones done quite well, and sort of the tension of like waiting for a reply. And one thing I really liked about We Are OFK is like being in that liminal space with these characters while they're on their phones and on their devices. I'm curious about how you went around that process of bringing the phone in as such an essential element of these characters, their personalities, and how they use their devices, because there's so much going on with what they miss when they're on them, as and also all of the sort of layered conversations that are happening in scenes while they're sort of sitting and talking to other people as well.
Where do we start? I have something to say, and then I feel voice. Like you, if you want to talk about character voice, I think that'd be fun.
Oh, sure.
All right, so like structurally, what was really striking to me is like people have asked or talked to us about like, oh, it's like interesting the use of texting. And for me, coming from mostly a games background in terms of writing, I felt like the amount of texting was very small. Like, and a lot of, I think, early work that you were doing on the outline was being like, there is this texting scene is too long. Like this texting scene lasts 2 minutes. That's like longer than most of the scenes that we're writing with the pace that we're going for. And so I had to kind of reprogram like tighter on texting, because pacing was one of the priorities of the project, and like the way we did the ensemble cast recording and the way that the dialogue had to be really tight on itself. The reason we don't do like press X to continue on dialogue like other video games might and follow more of a TV format. So that was a big thing for me, was just adapting to like, we have actually less than I was expecting to work with, but I think it worked really nicely with how they communicate in 2022 and like how we communicate, right?
Right. I mean, texting, I guess, has been such a big part of it since the beginning, because I feel like so much of our relationships and friendships are texting. Like, I feel like I'm way wittier and funny over text than I am whenever I speak. So it's like, it was a chance for me to really shine. But yeah, I feel like, you know, like, I'm glad that you picked up on some of these scenes where like there's a lot going on in the background, but also there's stuff going on over text. I mean, there's, you know, the big concerto scene, like, and we just really wanted to capture the realism of like texting is not just like this millennial and Gen Z invention that is destroying the universe. It's just like, it's a very critical part of about the way that we bond in today's society. And it's not a bad thing. I think it's quite beautiful. Some of my best times are spent texting my friends. So what Teddy was saying about voice, it was also like a perfect opportunity for us to really showcase the characters' voices. I mean, I think there's a certain way that you can speak, but also a certain part of your personality that can only come out through texting. And I always like to talk about how like Itsumi and Luca, the way that they talk over text especially, is very much me and Teddy. Like that was not even that, like writing that was not even like work. That was just like, let me just, you know, text as if I'm texting Teddy right now. So that was very fun. And it was fun to play with the other voices, because like Jay texts in a way that I would be very, if someone's ever texted me this way, I would be very scared. Lots of periods, lots of complete sentences, no misspelled words. I'm like,
uncomfortable. Uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really liked is, yeah, exactly as you said there, the contrast between the two like lives and conversations of how they're doing. And one I think I quite liked was the way that the conversations that you were writing for the characters felt very grounded in, you know, in many ways better than a lot of TV shows that I have seen. Can you tell me what are some of the, I guess, you know, character touchstones that you wanted to have for our main cast of characters, which you haven't really touched on that much, about the way that they do communicate? You mentioned Jay there, very matter of fact with the text, get everything correct. But what was it about the way that they talked and interact with each other when you were designing who they were in this world?
I mean, I think it was definitely a really fun thing to think about, like how they would be communicating over text. And I know Carter is very much someone who like, texts in a very specific way that we hope translated well between the way that they speak and also the way that they text. They're kind of like someone who is, you know, easily obfuscates what they're really feeling or talks about something, makes up a story or describes some like a reference in a book or a movie in favor of actually like opening up and being vulnerable, which we really wanted to emphasize over text. And I feel like with Jay, Luca, and Itsumi, it was very easy to know how that person would text. You know, we've all seen these kind of people before.
We've both dated avoidant people.
Yes.
You know, I'm so glad you said that word. I was about to say, like, as I was playing this, I have my good old notebook that I always like to write in when I'm watching or playing something. And you know, as a queer person, I have done a lot of therapy. I've been in the lucky position to afford it. I think it's a fun experience of growing up queer. And the first thing I started writing down was avoidance and avoidant over and over. And then also me in my 20s and then underlining that like a million times. And I really liked seeing that on screen because I think a lot when we think about characters who are queer, when we think about queerness in media, there is this idea to kind of represent like really polished, best of perfected people. And what I really loved about this cast in particular is they are all flawed. They are all in a process of growing up. And a lot of them have avoidant habits or issues with being able to communicate clearly to each other. And so many of the tensions among these characters would be resolved with a sit down conversation. But I love that there is a naturalness about the fact that they don't do that, because that is kind of what bumbling around in your early and mid 20s is like. It's a lot of feeling out and learning how to have conversations with people in a lot of ways. I'm curious how it came about writing those flaws into these characters, and was there a process where you were like, are we making a character unlikable here? Because what I found was there was so much empathy for all these characters that I didn't feel anyone was ever unlikable, despite flaws that would drive me crazy now.
Like, I think that was actually one of the things that for me, like, necessitated texting as part of the storytelling too, is because like, not only is tone different in texting or like we come across differently, but also like there are things sometimes that I'm unable to say or have been unable to say, or at least topics I've been unable to broach like through spoken language, right? And when you're trying to like tell a story about people who are having trouble communicating, but also like keep it tight and try to respect people's time and not have this drag out forever, it's like, cool, okay, like someone has to say something or something has to happen that's going to get this conversation going. And there are ways to do that without texting, but it just felt important for people who are learning how to express themselves. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm so glad that you resonate with these characters as flawed people, because you know we want all of them to be three-dimensional. It's like, it's 2022, like queer people can be fucked up too, like people of color can be assholes too. It's just, so you know, we especially like I personally like love the kind of like twist of Itsumi's character, because she like kind of, I mean, I don't want to give it away. I don't know, for people who haven't played it yet, I'm not going to say too much, but, you know, I feel like we posit her very much as this kind of like more vulnerable character, someone who wears her heart on her sleeve and seems to always be the one that's being hurt by others. But, you know, then there's a twist, you know, like everyone is capable of hurting other people and being hurt. So, yeah, I'm glad that they come off as flawed, but not unlikable. Because you know they're like our friends, of people who frustrate us but who we love.
Yeah. Well, that's the fun part of writing an ensemble, and also the important part for a project like ours, where it is kind of like a collective of creative people who are funneling like ideas and thoughts about the world and worldview into this set of four characters, into this like band, right? That we want to continue to exist, and they it needs to have its own perspectives and opinions on the world, right? And so, like, I don't know, for me, I know I hit a point in our character development where I was like, there's always the danger of making a character too likable, and you can always tell when a piece of work, like, reeks of, like, wow, this is such a self-insert character, and this character's so fucking quippy,
yeah.
And, like, they really got it, and, like, they're hot, and they're smart, and, like, wow, cool, like, I won't name names, I might name names eventually if I get mad about this, but, yeah, I don't know. Like for me, I know there's something in each one of the main casts where it's like, this is a thing that I have felt guilty about or shame about, or still is stuff that I have worked on or do work on in therapy. Like, not to use the work as therapy, but just to know, like, these are all things that I have felt and I have done that I don't feel good about, but I'm like aspiring to be a human being who treats other people well, right? So you can like, that's a healthy way, I think, to trust fall into, like, let's let these characters fuck up and be shitty and make those mistakes, because like, they're humans. I don't know.
Was it easier, or was it an added pressure to be playing a character in the game?
I don't know that maybe I compartmentalized this really well. I feel like during the writing process, I wasn't thinking too hard about it. Maybe you were. I don't know. Did you feel like, well,
There's always like the how much of Teddy is in Luca question, you know, that we want people to.
Do you write Luca to be a real jerk and then worry you're going to upset Teddy when Teddy has to deliver the lines?
I mean, the thing is, I feel like I really identify with Luca too. So, you know, if I'm dragging Teddy, I'm also dragging myself. So.
Yeah, that's true. What doesn't hurt me, what bounces off me, sticks to you.
Yeah.
I believe Jesus said that. Yeah. Fuck. Oh, yeah. Well, another thing that we did is we made sure to have rehearsals with the lead cast before the scripts were locked, which was something that, like, I also had always been jealous about from television and, like, a rolling production schedule, which we weren't quite doing, but wanted to be able to let the cast and their interpretations of the characters and their voices, like, bleed into the character or at least, like, meld with it a little bit. You know, and of course we were casting people to match the characters, but I think that was an important part of the process. So, yeah. The question of whether Luca and I are similar depends. I think it'll change over, it might change over time because I have to play Luca live sometimes now, and that's difficult.
I want to talk a little bit about, I guess, the gameplay of this game. You've landed at a point which is, it really unfolds and you're just given, presented with choices as you kind of go through. There are some interactive elements in it, especially as part of the musical parts of this game, where you've given a bit more choice. How did you land there for something that people will be playing as an interactive story?
Go ahead and set me off on my former narrative design master's student bullshit. Like, actually, the first prototypes did have some of that stuff. We had, like, walking around and environmental storytelling and all this stuff. And from the beginning, we were, like, choosing to play test and like, run the material by people who, like, didn't play games or, like, truly were not comfortable playing games or weren't, that audience. And I think oftentimes people who are making games will say, like, oh, we're making it for people who don't play games. But I'm like, okay, but you've got, like, action components. So is that really, like, how far can you push that? And for us, we just got a couple, like, we got some important feedback that was like, why am I walking around? Like, I want to know what's next, and I don't know how to make it do that. And, like, I don't really care what's on the fridge, you know? Like, I've never read anything that's on the fridge in, like, New Girl or whatever. So I think there was a lot of priorities on the project that we wanted to take, like, control of our choices before interactivity. And interactivity was a fundamental part of it in terms of wanting people to feel connected to the characters and their choices, wanting them to feel connected to the music with the music videos. But ultimately, like, when we were prioritizing things like performance and pacing and things like that, it's like, you know, you hear stories all the times of writers in games where, like, they'll hear from the design team, like, hey, we cut an entire city from the game. Like, we cut an environment. So, like, rework the outline to fit that. And that happens in, like, a lot of production. And we had our own constraints and cuts and stuff, but we really wanted to let, like, script drive the course of the project. Right. I don't think I actually answered the interactivity question. I think I just said script, but.
I want to dive into the music now because, you know, the fun thing about this project is there's so many facets, and I feel like we've got to start with virtual bands. Why did you want to create a virtual band, and was it seeing other virtual bands over the years that kind of made you go, I want to do that one day? Or
I feel like there were a lot of like anti-pillars that I developed over the years for virtual band stuff. Like, it's not like I personally specifically were like, I want to be a virtual band, but I did start thinking about this when I saw Hatsune Miku play in like 2016 or something, and I was like, wow, it actually is really beautiful the way that this performance is able to be like, somewhat larger than life, and it's fictionalized, but also everyone really buys into it, right? This like willing suspension of disbelief. But I was also frustrated by the fact that like Miku never riffs with the audience, or at least when I saw her, she wouldn't be like, hey, what's up? How you doing? Like, she couldn't, because that's hard to do with Vocaloid tech. So like, I guess that was where I started thinking about doing virtual band stuff. And then as we decided that the characters would be making music and decided like, hey, let's actually do this properly and see if we can try our hand at this, and looking at other examples, I just feel like I kept finding those things that I didn't love, like from projects that have a lot of credibility and great stuff, right? But like KDA has the problem of being so big. Like, it's a beautifully made project. The music's great and their materials is fucking gorgeous, but it's so big that they can't have a voice, right? The voice has to go through too many checks and too much process. And like, even if you can find someone who's entrusted with like running, I don't know if they've ever had like a Twitter of their own or something, but like they can't respond to stuff, right? Like if a world event happens, they can't have an opinion about it because there's too many voices in the room. There's too much money involved. There's like literally too many nations involved, right? So like they have kind of blockers in that way. Or also projects that like were kind of fucking up in terms of representation and making sure like, yo, if you're going to put your characters on a stage or out in the world, like it's rough enough when you see stories that are written by people that don't, you know, that are not reflecting the cast. But even worse, if you're trying to like create virtual characters and ask people to engage with them in real life, it's like, this better be coming from a place that's informed by some genuine perspective. And like, that became crucial to the way that like Michaela Foot and I were building the team from the start.
I'm curious about the character of Luca that you inhabit when you play in the band. It's almost like there's layers of performance. What's it like to be Luca in the band? And I'm curious about like performing live as well. You mentioned that it can be a bit challenging. So
far, like occasionally I've done interviews as Luca. We do some Twitch streaming. So I do like Twitch live as Luca. And as we start to think about live performances, it's going to be more and more relevant. The two big things that I struggle with is it is hard to perform live, right? Especially if like having to make up lore on the spot. Like, God, I pray we never actually get so popular that people are auditing the shit I've said. It's like, how many cousins do you have on your mom's side? Yeah. Like, I don't remember. It's not real, okay?
Yeah.
But also like personality-wise, like Luca is a little bit more like fucking fail, apologize. What is the word? Ask for forgiveness, not permission. Like I'm a little bit more like overthinky, cautious, careful, gentle touch. And Luca's a little bit more forward. Yeah. So that can be both cathartic, but also like a scary sometimes, you know? Our gender presentations are different. Our sexualities are a little different. So that's something that like, I'm still thinking about and still, you know, always in therapy about, but, and then I think the other thing, just from a production standpoint, that I'm starting to think through is like the fact that as Luca, as the director and as someone who plays a character and who's the singer, like I am this like vertical, right? And like that has helped the project because it allows for some agility. Like I can jump on and record a video greeting for something if we only have a 12-hour turnaround, right? But it also makes it more complicated when dealing with the other characters who are played by performers who like own those characters in their own way, but also are kind of sharing voice with the rest of the team. And we have to go through a bit more of a process. So I am thinking now, we're working on like how we do touring and how we make sure that like it's not the Luca show, because Luca is the front man for the band, but like it is important that not leak out, because like it's so fundamental to the series, right? That like Luca is very forward in the first two episodes, and then we just kind of like toss him away because we're like, we get it. Like,
we know your shtick.
I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I think it's always interesting to hear you talk about like you being Luca versus you being yourself. Yeah, I think it's a lot of things for Teddy to juggle.
Voice is a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm wondering, when you write these songs, do you go into character? Are you Luca when you compose a song and start writing lyrics and thinking of it from a musical sense, or are you going back into Teddy there?
I think, well, most of the first five songs in the EP were written with Luna Shadows and Thomas Powers, who's half of the Naked and Famous. And so like working with them from the beginning, like they took some cues from our scripts and from the story that we were writing, and like Luna and Tom pulled a little bit of dialogue from the script here and there, and then like worked their magic on it. That's a good question. I mean, I feel like because we discuss it as a band, and because when we talk about OFK as a band, we're kind of talking about the creative collective behind it. There's not as much pressure for me to be like, what would Luca think? Because it's kind of like, here are some thoughts that Luca might have, but these could have come from Jay, these could have come from Carter or Itsu or whoever. Except for Debug, who thankfully cannot speak. Almost spoke.
Yeah.
Didn't.
True.
Yeah, so there's less pressure in that context, I think, to write like as Luca. I think that can be a little bit more like an organic process.
Curious by the music as well, because, you know, the songs are all deeply informed by modern pop music and, you know, lots of memorable hooks and melodies. And when I think about pop, like at its best, it's about like real emotional highs and lows. And it's about like taking you into an emotional place and like hitting you over the head with it. And I'm kind of curious because like, I feel like the show has sort of done the same thing and, you know, or the game, if you will. I kind of think of it as a TV show in my brain. But was there a choice to kind of go with this genre in particular, this sort of sound for the band because of where the story was emotionally heading and how you were approaching these characters in terms of highs and lows of their experiences?
It made a lot of sense for it to be somewhere in like a pop space for reasons related to like my singing and my range and the sort of ways that I sing. But also things like we wanted to discuss the industry of music, right? And things that like someone like Vincent Mode, who operates at a mega scale, like we're looking at certain artists who are like these like mega DJ EDM folks.
Feel free to name and shame and drag people if you'd like.
Not on that one. But yeah, we're a little bit too like down the street from some of them. Literally, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think pop just made a lot of sense. Like I personally like to sing a lot of like either pop or R&B or somewhere in between. And so like pop felt kind of like a good start. You know, I also think like something that I think we're working towards now and that I want to see from the music is that like it's a little bit of a friendly start. It's a little bit of like a, hey, here's these characters. We know it's kind of an animated series and it can be a little bit like pleasant and fun. We do try to get human and deep and like, you know, have these characters be flawed. So it's not like happy-go-lucky, but it is a little bit like it's trying to be welcoming in terms of tone, right? And I think I would like to see the music get a little more fucky as we go and little wilder. But I think I'm happy with the place we started because like it does both somehow matches the genre like visually and in terms of storytelling. And also, like you said, like the songs each sit in an emotional space and let you kind of like sink into what's happening with the given focal character for an episode.
How does it feel to be covered in the music press as part of this? You've seen you've done interviews with Rolling Stones. You got airplay on the radio here in Australia last week or so. What does it feel like to be doing that from a creative process? How does that make you feel?
The reason that we premiered the project or announced the project at the Game Awards in 2020 through pretty much just a music performance was because we knew we were operating in like a proper, like we are creating tracks with pop musicians, with pop mix engineers, et cetera. And so we want to make sure that the project is treated that way. Like I didn't want us to go the way of, for example, like Sayonara Wild Hearts, which like we get some comparisons to, but like they never really tried to be a music project. Like there is no artist name for that music. It's just the composer, right? And like they never wanted to do more or operate as an artist. It was just kind of like for the purposes of making this game kind of musical. So to me, like in addition to just being like, holy fucking shit, we're in Rolling Stone or Spin, is that it's treated not as just a game soundtrack, right? And game soundtracks are incredible, but they're one space in the music world. And we wanted to also exist and be treated as an act in its own right. So that's been cool because that's all we're beating the drum on right now is like, we're not going away. Like we're trying to do more music. We're trying to be this band. Like we're asking you to get to know the band through the series because we want to stick around.
I can't wait for the Australasian tour, maybe coming down, playing some of the capital cities of your local town. You'll be able to find OFK. Teddy and Claire, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Lightmap.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Build me up, tear me down. Come apart, come around. Paralyzed, I rely.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/discord.
You can find out more about the game, the biopic, and the music on ofk.cool. It's out now. You can pick up every episode on Steam, on Switch, and on PlayStation. Sifter is produced by Nicholas Kennedy, Fiona Bartholomeus, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, who is my co-host on this episode. Thank you, Adam. Mitch Lowe is our senior producer, and my name is Gianni Di Giovanni, and I'm the executive producer.
Thanks to Omni Studio for their support of Sifter's 3 podcasts. You can find the links to everything we talked about on our website, which is at sifter.com.au, and read more about the games and guests that we've covered and featured there.
That's all for now. Thank you so much for joining us, and until next time, have fun.
Hi, Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Unicorn Overlord might have a strange name, but don't dismiss its tactical prowess.
It uses a tactics mode, and which is similar to the Gambit system that was in Final Fantasy XII for your squad mates. And you can say, okay, well, you know, Hodrick, who's my legionnaire with the big shield, I want him to prioritize protecting the back row. They're going to take the most damage. If they take a physical hit, they're going to go down, but I need them to be protected. So you can get quite granular with this, and I reckon you could build some pretty wild builds that are totally game-breaking, but it's kind of the fun of the tactical squad-based gameplay in Unicorn Overlord.
Tune in to Drop Rate to find out why Unicorn Overlord might just be one of 2024's sleeper hits. Available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.